back to the Carolina Outdoors, where we are talking about the different things happening in our Carolina Outdoors. Of course, Halloween right around the corner, and the seasonality of Halloween is something that we feel that is important to talk about. Also, during this time of year at Jesse Brown's, the outdoors really wakes up. Not just the outdoor places that we like to go, but also the outdoor people who like to go there. A lot of people have headed for the mountains, not only for the leaf change and the different aspects of viewing, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, but also the sports, hiking, mountain biking. And at Jesse Brown's, we've had a lot of fly fishing going on, including our own trips, the fly fishing wading trips that we've been taking Jesse Brown. So if you're interested, let's meet Streamside and go fish. Just contact us at Jesse Brown's. Send an email, jesse@jessebrowns.com, or give a call, 704-556-0020. We've had a lot of people out in those mountains, so the streams are relatively crowded depending on the time and the place. All the more reason to have a guide so that you can be in the right place that doesn't have a lot of people and where the fish are biting. And oh yeah, also you might learn a little bit about the sport of fly fishing. Talking about those views that people see, and we're going to bring Wes Lawson on to the program, general manager of Jesse Brown's, and he's going to share a little bit of lore. But Wes, before we talk about some of the origins of Halloween, I wanted to ask you, are you familiar with the mysterious lights of Brown Mountain? This is over in the Linville Gorge area here in North Carolina.
Billy, I have heard a lot about those lights, but I have never seen them. I would love to see it, I think, but it also sounds like it could be a little spooky sometimes, and you know, you only have to believe a little bit for that stuff to get kind of scary. So I'm excited about what we've got going on. Hey, before we do, you mentioned fly fishing trips. You didn't mention the new jessebrowns.com page. It's been totally redone, y'all. Check it out, www.jessebrowns.com. Check it out. You can shop the whole store online. But let's talk about those lights, Bill, because I love folklore and ghost stories, and I sometimes like to get scared, but I don't know about this one.
Well, here we go. And then I'm going to see if you have an explanation in your notes over there as you try to give us a little bit of the answers of lore. Now, as we air via WBT Radio earlier, the Coast to Coast program that talks about many conspiratorial things, spooky things, aliens, all of that. So we understand that has gone on WBT. For all of the people who are joining us via podcast, we welcome you. You can access it as the aforementioned jessebrowns.com or wherever you may be listening to podcasts. But the first hints of the Linville Gorge's Brown Mountain lights here in North Carolina occurred around a Cherokee legend, 1200 AD to be more exact, 800 years ago or so, 1,000 years ago, a great battle fought between the Cherokee and Catawba Indians at this Brown Mountain site. The mysterious lights are reportedly the Indian maidens that are still searching for their men who died in battle. However, other scientists talk about these lights being reported as red, white, yellow, orange, and blue. They look like little mini fireballs that are floating near the ground or rising up towards the sky. There has been a symposium inviting scientists, but also paranormal investigators to this program to discuss the theory. Some say it's gases that are kind of reflecting or refracting light that are causing this mysterious occurrence to happen. Others say during a 1913 U.S. Geological Survey, they concluded the headlights were from a locomotive. But when the tracks washed away 3 years later, people continued to see the lights. So that theory of the locomotive was thrown out. Also, here we go, during the early 1900s, the mysterious lights were thought to be aliens, and Brown Mountain was even featured in the Argosy, an American pulp magazine, telling people to go see the UFOs at Brown Mountain. Are we getting scared yet? I don't know. There are all kinds of different reports of this. One local story there in Morganton, back in 1982, had resident Tommy Hunter saying that he actually touched the lights at the Highway 181 overlook. This is a place that you can view Brown Mountain and, during the evening, sometimes see the lights. I've never seen them. He had looked over the edge and saw a ball of light that was hovering, and he touched it. He said he felt like he had stuck his finger in a light socket. Six other people were with Tommy that night, and they acted as eyewitnesses and corroborated the story. So here we are talking about it. We do not have the answers. During the symposium that I mentioned, the question was asked, so are the lights real? The participants, which included Joshua Warren, who's a paranormal expert, and Daniel Caton, who's a professor at Appalachian State University, a scientist, they say the question is not that if the lights are real. The question is, what are they? And for now, and for anywhere into this Halloween season, we do not have the answer. But Wes, we do have the answers to some other reasons and legends and lores from Halloween. Can you share those with us?
You know, even if you don't want to believe those stories, they're fun stories. It's part of our lore, and they're part of our culture. That's really important. So you're talking about something that dates back at least to 1200. Halloween, we know, was first written about and shared through oral tradition about 200 years earlier, so about 1,000 years ago, in the Celtic realm, so Ireland, Isle of Man, Scotland, and then parts of Wales and the rest of the island of what we now know as the UK, but maybe even dates back to pre-Christianity times, so pre-Christian times, pre-Roman times, so potentially thousands of years ago. And if you look it up, typically people will say, oh, it's, you know, Halloween's All Hallows Eve, it's Day of the Dead, and we kind of stop there. This combines a number of other traditions, some of which we've absorbed now, and it all has to do with a Celtic and Druid event called Samhain. Now, I don't speak that language, so I pronounced it Samhain for a long time and was corrected, so it's actually Samhain, and it goes back same date as Halloween, give or take a day. And it was a harvest festival. It was the end of the harvest season. And so people were celebrating that, but as that day got short, you know, that's when the fields go fallow, things are dying. And, you know, this is way before electricity, way before kerosene. When it got dark, it was dark. And one of our deepest, most innate fears is darkness. Bill, we sell a lot of flashlights in this store because of darkness.
You are right.
And for Halloween, a lot of Kim lights, you know, little glow sticks. But so they knew they were going to go into a 6-7 month period of darkness. You know, they were going to have a lot more nighttime than daytime, and they're scared of that because you wouldn't go visit neighbors down the way at night because of a fear of not just injury, but what happens at night, what goes bump in the night. It's not animals, they would think it was bad spirits. So they figured this was a time when more of these spirits would be more active. And it's not just those of deceased people, but it's also evil spirits, which were bad actors, but then also wood nymphs, which is sort of like a minor deity, not quite a god, not a human, not a mortal. They do have a lifespan. It's just longer than ours. And they were worried, you know, what could happen. So one way you'd move around would be in costume, because if you moved around in costume during Samhain, during Halloween, those spirits wouldn't recognize you. It wouldn't try and take you away, because if they took you away, you were gone forever. But they also thought that the deceased were going to come back this one night, because they thought it was some sort of, you know, aligning of the worlds, the living world and the deceased world. So they would have feasts to celebrate and to honor them and to feed them, because they wanted them to be happy. Because if your ancestors were happy, if the minor deities were happy, you would have a good harvest. You'd have life. If you didn't, you wouldn't have life. So you kind of see that there's sort of this dichotomy there. And so they would host these things, which we now call parties. And then, you know, the Romans get involved a couple hundred years later. They have a minor deity named Pomona, the goddess of the harvest, or of a harvest, specifically for fruit trees, apples. So we bob for apples. That's where that comes from. But you're still afraid of the dark. So how do you move around? Well, you create this little jack-o'-lantern out of a turnip or a sugar beet. They didn't have pumpkins yet. And they would light that to create light, but to also scare away the bad things. So that's where some of this comes from. We don't yet have candy. That hasn't been created yet. That's coming down the pipeline because, you know, that part of the world, they've had a lot of different bosses and owners and cultures over the years. And so it changes. The Catholic Church gets involved. Anglican Church, a couple hundred years later, gets involved. And we start praying for people. All of our saints, known and unknown, all the deceased and those yet to be deceased. And so that becomes Halloween. And one way you get people to pray for your folks is you bribe them with soul cakes, little food, and the poorer children would take one of those and they would pray for your loved ones. And if you didn't give them that little soul cake, that little treat, they'd play a trick on you. So it was really treat or trick. If you don't give me a treat, I'm going to play a trick on you. And it wasn't always a good one.
The voice right there, Wes Lawson, general manager of Jesse Brown's, kind of giving us the origins of some of the lore and story that we celebrate now. Why do we celebrate the way we celebrate? He's giving us a breakdown of all of that. Speaking of celebrate, of course, we all know that this Halloween's different. Jesse Brown's is open on Halloween Day, and we're going to invite you and your children, grandchildren, whoever, to come by Jesse Brown's. We'll have candy available from 10 a.m. until 6. Come in costume. We'll also have a discount coupon for those who want to participate that way. So we're talking about Halloween Day, October 31st. If you're listening to us via podcast after that, you can still dress up, but it might be a little weird if you showed up on November 5th that way. So everyone listening early via the airwaves of WBT Radio and wants to pay us, the outdoor guys at Jesse Brown's, a visit, stop by anytime between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. That's when we're open here in the Sharon Corner Shopping Center in the heart of the South Park Shopping District. Jesse Brown celebrates Halloween, even these days, safely, but also giving away candy and discount coupons to use here in the store. So, Wes, I've got a question for you. Back to how it all evolved and developed. So you took us back 1,000 years or more, I guess, to this, and we've collected a lot of these things, ways that we celebrate, but somewhere along the way, we started dressing up more. We started dressing in costumes, hiding our identity for fun, maybe, but was it always fun?
It wasn't always fun. It was out of fear. So fear of these sort of body snatching spirits, good and bad, but fear of being taken away and not knowing what would happen. You know, the unknown is a very scary thing, especially in a very provincial time, 1,000 years ago, even a few hundred years ago, even maybe today. So it wasn't initially about fun. It was about this fear of some sort of reprisal, spiritually and otherwise, because if those spirits were angry at you, you know, what bad things could happen? You could disappear, your family could get hurt, your fields would go fallow. And, you know, that foretells a big Irish immigration to the United States hundreds of years later, which actually brought this tradition to us, because you'll recall some of the earliest Anglican settlers here, they weren't Catholic. They weren't celebrating Halloween. They weren't Anglican either. They weren't celebrating a lot of these traditions. So in New England for several hundred years, this tradition was very obscure and oftentimes shunned. It really wasn't until the early to middle 1800s, so antebellum time, that this really began to pick up, and then into the early 1900s, and then it becomes more fun because the country has more optimism. So, you know, the country's on the ascent. People had that sense of joy. We also have more treats. You know, food was more available, crops were better, but we had sweets. We had abundance of that kind of stuff, so people wanted to find reasons to celebrate. We hadn't yet had prohibition. You know, we were going to try anything and try it. We did. So then the costumes were a little less scary, but a little more over the top. So it was more caricature. People, if they did dress up, you know, it was either in a sheet looking kind of what we would consider now to be kind of hokey, or it really was like they were going on stage. So it's changed a lot. And then it really ramped up in the 50s and 60s when you started seeing, you know, community-oriented trick-or-treating. Trunk or treats in the last 20 years have really picked up because it's safe. And let's be honest, you can, as a kid, you can net a bunch of candy going through a school or a church or a community trunk or treat, because those people are just shoveling out of the back of those cars. My goodness. And if you're a parent and you love candy but don't want to admit that, take your kid to a trunk or treat. You're going to clean up. But so, you know, it keeps going. And now we've, you know, we don't bob for apples, and I bet we're not going to this year and maybe ever again. That's really been on the decline, because we know putting your face in a bowl full of water or a tub full of water with a bunch of other faces is a big fat no-no. And we also don't really do apples or produce on Halloween either. So we really have moved away from the tricks and more toward the treats, because it's fun. And it's also become largely a children's holiday in this regard. Now All Saints Day, All Hallows Day, Day of the Dead in Latin America, specifically in Mexico, is very different. But that's also relatively young. That's melding some of the Latin cultures and the Roman Catholic traditions. That's a whole different conversation, because there's a lot going on there for the foundation. You know, their use of calaveritas, which were these small, sugary, decorative skulls that have become kind of the icon for Day of the Dead down there. So it's here in the U.S., it's become largely a kid's holiday. We know that. But the roots go way back to agrarian Ireland, Scotland, Isle of Man, the Gaelic cultures, a little bit of the Germans in there too, because they like to work their way into these things too. So that's kind of where that comes from. And, you know, ghost stories date back, the first known ghost story, Pliny the Elder, about 2,000 years ago. And that story's been changed over the years. It's been adapted and modified for current culture.
Well, and so just to touch up on that, I guess All Saints Day and Day of the Dead, that sort of thing, has a religious tone continuing, and also a very somber and more reverent tone than the wild and craziness of dressing up and seeking out candy and that sort of thing. I think you're right, though. Maybe we are talking about the origins of these ways that we celebrate Halloween, but maybe right now we are setting the new tone for how we will celebrate into the future. Many communities, Chester County, South Carolina, other communities in the Charlotte area and beyond, are not having Halloween. It is not being a trick-or-treat celebration, which is sad for many folks. But the trunk or treats and the gatherings by car and trading candy like that is more in vogue and continues to be in vogue. You hear the term accelerator used with what the pandemic has done, and maybe that will be an accelerator to the way people do Halloween. Hey, at Jesse Brown's, we think you all should dress up like outdoor men and women. What does that mean? Well, stop by Jesse Brown's The Store or jessebrowns.com. Check out our wear from Patagonia, Barber, JB's, Southern Tide, Mountain Khakis, Cool, Yeti, and of course, all of the fly fishing brands under the sun that are all here. Those will be a great part of your costume Halloween 2020. And again, if you stop by this Halloween from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. dressed up, or you can just be the driver for your children, they'll get candy, you'll get a discount card. Wes, thank you for joining us and giving us a lay of the land of Halloween and how we celebrate it now, and maybe how we're going to celebrate it in the future. We're going to take a quick break, come back with more. You're listening to The Carolina Outdoors with the Outdoor Guys from Jesse Brown's.